The Linux Link Tech Show is proudly sponsored by Open Country, providers of OCM, award-winning systems management software for the Linux Enterprise, and exclusive sponsors of the Webmin Project.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show! Tech Show! Tech Show! Yeah!
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
You know, this is where we start to talk over.
Yeah, you didn't actually blurt anything out at the beginning of the opening audio this time, Alan. You're slipping.
Well, I was listening to the stream. I wanted to make sure that we sounded all right.
Excuses.
Hey, somebody's got to listen to the stream every once in a while to make sure that it was actually working.
We got a wonderful guest tonight, all ready to go. Pat, introduce our guest.
We've got a good friend, Aaron Newcomb from The Source. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Good to be here.
Hopefully this episode finally makes it. It seems like anytime we have you on, we have issues. The last time you on, it was kind of unannounced, and you came on. You talked for quite a bit with us, and that was the episode that Dan had a meltdown. And speaking of meltdowns, last week Dan's ISP had a meltdown.
Yeah, what happened with that?
My ISP had an unofficial. Okay, it was unofficial because the guy said it wasn't official area outage. That over 46%. I don't know if it reached the 50%, but over 46%. Of the cable modems in my area were dark.
But it wasn't official.
It wasn't official because they didn't officially declare it. And they were pretty good because I have a business account, so the guy's like, I'm going to, you know, log this in, and, you know, about half an hour later, another guy called me and said, yeah, we're having problems. I hope to have it up within, like, 2 hours, but I could barely understand this guy. It sounded like he was talking through, like, cellophane and whispering. At the same time, you know, kind of like half in the bag, but I don't think he was drunk. It was just really hard to understand him. And
that was a connection from India.
Yeah. Yeah, they were fixing it from India. Bombay. But they had it back up about an hour and a half later. I don't think it actually became solid until like sometime early the next morning. Wow. Everything was running fine. Like, I can go to websites and different things, but FTP was like really slow. When I was trying to transfer the show, what little bit of the show we had up to our servers, it was just dog slow. And that's what happened.
It's what happens when you do a live show.
That's it. Makes everybody cry. Speaking of shows, how is The Source coming these days? I haven't seen an episode recently.
Yeah, I've got to say, you know, Brian and I have been really tied up with stuff lately. Although, if you go out and check the website, which is, of course, www.thesourceshow.org, we'll actually do that after the show so I don't hit bandwidth spikes all of a sudden. But if you go out and check there, you'll see I put up a post. We should have another show out in the next week. We're almost done editing. We've had some footage that's been sitting around for a little bit, actually, now, just because of various things. And so we've got to put that together. We've got one more segment to edit, and then we'll be ready to go. So should have another show in another week or so.
Cool. What topics are you going to go?
Well, we've got an interview with some folks at Sun about the ZFS file system. So that's one segment. And then we've got Cinelera tutorial number 2, where we talk about editing in Cinelera. So
you
the
know,
last...
That tutorial was great, man, and I really think you need to continue with that. That's one program that I've been really dying to get into for the longest time.
Yeah, we do all our video editing with Cinelera, and I know Cinelera's got some, you know, it's taken some hits. You guys have mentioned it before, and the Lug Radio guys have mentioned it. It's kind of like any other program. I mean, it's similar to the GIMP. If you're a Photoshop user or a Paint Shop user, and you start using the GIMP, you're going to be lost pretty quick. I mean, it's going to seem daunting at first, especially if you're not used to editing in multiple windows. But once you get used to it and you realize the kind of stuff that you can do with Cinelera, it is a really powerful program. It is a pro tool. I mean, I classify it as a pro tool. It's not your mother's or your grandmother's video editor for sure. But once you get used to it, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you can do in Cinelera. Really cool stuff.
Yeah, I you know what? Maybe it's because I really haven't given Cinelera much of a chance on the few dozen times I've tried to use it. But I find it closer to Blender than I do the GIMP, at the interface being really kind of not approachable. Easy to approach. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. Because when you first start Blender, I mean, unless you're following a tutorial or something, you just get lost really quick. It's like, keys don't work the way you think they're going to. And I would agree, Cinelera is similar in that respect. So there's definitely a learning curve. And I think it's something that they're working on is the interface. There's some new themes out there that kind of make things a little bit more intuitive. And they're making small changes all the time, which help a lot. But you're right. I mean, it's not easy to get used to at first. You have to kind of stick with it. What I tell people is, give it a week. You know, use it for a week straight if you're working on a project or something, and you know, hit the mailing list if you have any trouble. Definitely start out with the manual in front of you. There's a downloadable manual, or there's a manual you can start with. So have that ready to go. Don't just open it up and try to use it. You know, because like you said, it's not intuitive. So, you know, have the manual there, you know, have access to the mailing list, which is really, really good. People are really friendly there, and they're always willing to help out, even with the most basic questions. So have those two resources ready, and then hit it for a week and see what you can come up with.
How is that manual, the downloaded manual?
It's a really, really good manual. It's very, very well documented. What I would recommend to people is skip right to the end of the manual and look at the keyboard shortcuts, because that's really what's going to make your life a lot easier in Cinelera, is knowing those keyboard shortcuts and how to modify things and work with things. The other thing, too, like you said, I mean, there's a PDF version, there's an online version, I think there's even a LaTeX version, if you're into that. But you can get on there and search pretty easily for whatever you're looking for. But spend some time in there, maybe even spend some time in there first before you try to work with Cinelera. Just try to get used to the concepts, because they are quite a bit different than other editors like Kino or some of the newer ones coming up like Diva or PityV. I haven't tried out KDE NLive yet, but after the interview you guys had the other day, I'm kind of anxious to try that out and see how well that's going.
Good luck.
The only distribution that it comes standard is on Mandriva.
Mm.
Otherwise, you got to compile from you know, yourself. So.
Right. Now, I have checked out some of the other. There's some smaller distributions like Dynabolic. Are you guys familiar with Dynabolic?
Yeah, I use it for part of the streaming of the show.
Yeah. So I know Dynabolic comes with Cinelera. I don't know if they've included KDM Live yet, but they're coming along pretty good. So I would imagine at some point they might include, if KDM Live gets to the point where it's easy to use and easy to install and stuff, I've got to imagine that they would probably include that in that distribution as well.
I think he said it's still a couple of years off, huh? Well, whatever happened to PityV?
PityV is in active development, and it sounds like they're moving along at a good clip. The one that's dormant right now is Diva, because it was basically one guy, and the guy is now working for Nokia. So basically, they're looking for somebody to pick it up since he left.
Yeah, good luck. I don't know.
Yeah,
there aren't a whole lot of people that want to jump on the Novell bandwagon.
Yeah, Does any C++ programmers want to pick up a multimedia application to work with? Diva's waiting for you.
No, I thought Diva was written in Mono.
Is it Mono?
Yeah, I thought it was.
I'm pretty sure that that was part of that whole F-Spot, Banshee,
right.
Diva.
Yep.
You play with Diva a bit, Dan, didn't you?
You know what? I don't think I did. I wanted to go look at it, but... No, I played with PityV for a little bit, and that was like almost a year ago.
You actually had it working?
Yeah. Oh, it wasn't.
Wow.
It wasn't easy. It wasn't. It was working. I could get it to run to actually work. Like I can like import an AUG or a Theora file, but it was kludgy and crashed a lot. And
there was a package for PityV in the Ubuntu repositories. You read it.
Yeah, it's in there. I just installed it.
Yeah, it's in there.
I'll definitely have to check
it
out. Last time I looked at it. Yeah, see, that's the thing. Last time I looked at it, I couldn't get it working. And what they said in a lot of the mailing list and stuff was that they were working mostly on the back end, trying to get the back end figured out before they were working on the front end. So it was kind of hard to actually test it out. But if it's in the, you say it's in the Ubuntu repositories, I'll have to give it a try.
It is.
Yeah, good luck with it. I just tried to run it, and it keeps blowing up.
The whole thing with a lot of these newer apps is they all use GStreamer, and GStreamer, the development is moving so fast that it's like, you know, you're trying to hit a moving target. They need to get a stable version of everything so that everybody can, you know, use it, and then it's in all the different repositories for the different distributions.
Yeah, they're still making so many changes so fast to that framework that it's kind of a moving target. But like I said, I mean, most everything that they've come out with, even in the CVS, has been solid, but it's just like, okay, solid for how long? You know, solid for a couple of weeks and then it changes. So I think they'll get there. I know Diva was pretty high up on our list of things to keep track of. We mentioned it on the show a couple episodes back, and we put a video... one of their demonstration videos, we spliced that into our show because it did look really cool. Some of the things that you could do with it, even in, you know, just as far as that guy had gotten up to that point, looked really, really neat. It looked like it had a lot of promise. So I don't know. I hope it doesn't fall by the wayside, but it's tough when you move, you know, change jobs and stuff kind of falls off. So
well, it's tough because it's one guy doing everything.
Exactly. Yeah, kind of like our show.
Yeah. Speaking of which, nobody's contacted you, seeing if you need some help?
Yeah, not really. I mean, we've started to get some contacts, some interested people actually in helping us out in terms of sponsorships and things like that. So that's good news. I mean, we've kind of got the interest of some companies out there that are involved with open source that may have some resources to send our way. So that's really good. But not a whole lot of interest from the community yet in some of the simpler things. And I think it's just because we really need to get out there and let people know what we need. What I'm thinking of doing now is putting up a detailed list of different jobs that people can do, such as, you know, posting in forums when new episodes come out, or, you know, just kind of doing some PR work. I mean, that's the simplest thing that people can do. People to get on the forums and really get those going. People to monitor the site for spam. I mean, that would be huge. Even though we have a good spam filter now on the website, I mean, we still get like I just went in there today. It's been maybe a few days, and I just went in there today and cleaned out about 100 of them. And there was about 1,000 that got caught by the spam filter, and about 100 that didn't. So even people, you know, that can do simple things like that would really help out a lot, because that would free up our time to work on the editing and the rendering and things like that, the key things that have to happen. I'm also looking at working with some of the guys that know Cinelera better to see whether it would be possible, because one of the neat things about Cinelera is that all the edits are done, the edit lists are maintained in XML format. When you go in and edit a file, it's actually going into an XML file and putting all those changes that you make in XML. And then you can save that and then bring it right back up on not just my PC here, but anybody's PC that has a copy of the same media can bring that up and start editing from wherever I left off. So one of the things I'm looking at doing is, I know some of the other high-end commercial applications will let you take your media and transcode it way, way down so that you can ship it in an email, somebody download it off of an FTP site or something, and then other people can actually edit the material together and then send back their XML file. Then I can take that XML file that they send back and apply it to the original media, and bam, I'd have a segment that was done, edited, ready to go.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it should be possible. Since Cinelera does all its edit lists in XML, it should be possible to do that. I'm just trying to figure out a way to make that happen. That way, you know, somebody in Europe or Asia or around the world could download, a smaller transcoded version of the media and do all the editing and then just send back their XML edit list and plug it in, away we go.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so those are some of the ways that people can help. You know, if anybody's interested, you know, you can always email us at thesourcefans@gmail.com and let us know that you're interested in helping with the show somehow. Let us know what you can do, what you're good at, or what you think you might be good at, and we'll definitely try to find something for you to do. We've got a lot right now, and that's why the episodes haven't been coming out as frequently as we would like, because we've just got so much work to do, plus our normal day jobs and family life and all that other stuff, like you guys know. It can be pretty hard to pull that stuff together.
And where are you? You're in Cincinnati, right?
Right, Cincinnati, Ohio. So if there's people local to Cincinnati that want to lend, you know, they can email that same address. And, you know, if you're local, then there's always stuff you can do. You can, you know, help us with lighting or cameras, setting up, tearing down things. I mean, all of that stuff is very helpful. We're also looking to get a few new hosts on board. We've got, of course, myself and Brian Burgess. Brian's pretty busy, or he was busy up till November with political work, and now that's kind of eased off a little bit, so he's got some more time, so that's one of the reasons why we're going to have a couple of episodes coming out pretty soon. But, you know, we're looking for fill-in people, because basically right now, if it's just me, I can't do it. Or if it's just Brian, we can't do it. But if we had two or three more people that could fill in and kind of substitute or help us out on a regular basis, then we could, you know, if one of us was sick or whatever, we could still get work done. So we're looking for some hosts, too, if you're local in the Cincinnati area and you're into open source and want to help out, again, let us know at thesourcefans@gmail.com.
Hopefully somebody helps out, man. Sounds like you guys, you know, definitely get the ball rolling a little more. Because it's got to be tough, man. Video work is very tedious.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I mean, it's
time.
Absolutely. You know, what I've found is that it takes us, and I think I shared this with you guys out at the Ohio Linux Fest, but it takes us about 40 hours of work to edit one episode together. So compared to audio, I mean, it's probably, you know, 40 times the amount of work you have to put into it. So it is very tedious. And then, you know, after you get the show together, there's and you get the final render done, then transcoding into the various formats. If you look at our site, you'll see all the various formats that we put out. There's, of course, AUG in both video and audio versions. And there's XVID, MP4. We even do a version for the Nokia 770.
Yes.
So, you know, it that's a lot of work, too. So it does take quite a bit of time, but we're committed to it right now. We want to keep doing it because basically, you know, especially for me, I mean, I believe in open source and I want to do something to contribute back to the community. I do a little bit of coding, but I'm not a coder. You know, in the day, I've created a bunch of Perl scripts for a job that I used to have. So I was getting pretty good at Perl for a while. But, you know, but I can't really work on, I'm not good enough to work on C code or anything like that. So, that's kind of out. Documentation is one thing, but boy, documentation's hard. That's why it never gets done. It's pretty tedious work. So this is a way that I felt, and you know, Brian's kind of slowly coming on board too, that really this is a way that we can contribute back to the community that's done such great work, you know, with tons of applications. It's a way that we can contribute back and hopefully, get other people interested in open source software as well.
Cool. You guys do a great show, man.
Great. Thanks. We appreciate it. And I think we're...
I enjoyed every episode, you know? I look forward to seeing a new episode when it comes out.
Well, I always tell people, too, that, we're still a little rough, and partly it's because, we're doing it by ourselves, but, I think it'll get better over time. I was just looking out at the website, and it's interesting that I was... the website, it's been a year and 5 days since I started up the website. So that was kind of interesting. Our first episode didn't come out until March of last year. So I think that'll probably be our official anniversary date. But the website itself was put up just a little over a year ago. So it's amazing. Time goes very, very quickly.
So you got the website. You got the old shows coming out with a new show soon.
Yep.
What future endeavors is the source going to embrace? Is it going to be just some of the, continuing on the track that you're going, or do you have some big plans?
We do have some plans. One of the things we're looking into, and we've been looking into it for a little bit, is starting a open source news podcast, an audio podcast. We thought about doing something kind of like Rocket Boom, but again, even that much is really too much to do for us on a weekly basis. So what we're thinking about doing is starting up a 15-minute, fairly short, open source news podcast, because that's one thing that we haven't seen. Maybe you guys can help us out if you know of one like this. But basically, what we're looking to do is make it a headline show, so you get the top headlines of the week, maybe at 6 or 7, just kind of a quick overview of what's been going on in the week, just in case you missed anything, and then maybe a tech tip of the week type of a thing, and that would be it. So it would be something really quick that we would do every week, probably come out on either Friday or a Monday, and just to kind of give everybody a heads up of what's gone on, in case they missed something or been away from their PC for a while or whatever. Something they could listen to in the car and kind of catch up on the latest headlines.
That's called the Linux log.
I've heard
about the Linux log.
There's also the Linux Daily that is daily, but that never got off the ground, did it? Just like the Linux show.
It's
never come back.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. No, but Pat is right. There is the Linux log, but I'm...
And there's also Microsoft log and also Apple log, too.
Right, and I'm sure that your contribution would also be welcome. I would love to have another, show, because it's hard to keep up with all the stuff that goes on in the FOSS community. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. Now, is Linux log daily or weekly?
I think it's weekly.
It's usually weekly. I haven't heard a Linux log in about 2 weeks, so maybe he sometimes gets tied up with stuff.
Yeah. One of the other things that I'm interested in doing as well, although it's going to be tougher to pull together, and I may not have the time to do it, but I'd love to see kind of a This Week in Open Source, kind of like This Week in Tech, but just for the open source community. Because there's a lot going on in open source right now, and it just doesn't get picked up on This Week in Tech. And FLOSS Weekly is a good show, but they're more about interviews with, people in the open source community, which is great. But I'd love to see a weekly, a weekly news program with, people in the industry contributing to that weekly. And I think that would be great to see. I don't know. It would be hard to put together, I think, but I think people would really love to hear a show like that.
Why not? Another show would be good.
There was what was I listening to? I can't remember which show, but somebody had written in and said that they're starting a show where they're going to be interviewing or sending a couple of questions out to prominent members in the FOSS community and kind of like putting a show together based upon that, like 3 or 4 questions, I guess, that they'll ask Bruce Perens and Richard Stallman and maybe somebody else. And I don't know if he intends to actually get like audio commentary from them or whether he's going to read comments or the re- questions. I'm not sure exactly how it's going to fly, but I can't remember exactly which show I heard that on.
Hmm.
But, you know what? There are 50 billion Mac shows. There are 50 billion Windows shows.
Ugh.
I think I would be more than happy to have another show, even if it does the same thing that some other show does, because it's just all new commentary and unique comments.
And that, I'm up for new shows all the time, man. The more the merrier, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I think we need more of it. I mean, and you know, you guys obviously have a great show and have been doing it for forever. And I just think we need, I think we need more of that. You know, I think that there's definitely an audience out there. I run across people all the time that have never heard of any of ours, you know, and I tell them and they're like, oh, I've never heard of that. That's great. You know, I want to check that out when I get home. I'm going to download some episodes, you know. So, I mean, that's another big thing too, is I think, at least in the podcasting realm, is trying to get your show marketed and, you know, keep it interesting and get people to listen to it. And I think it can be done, but I think it can be challenging too with the proliferation of podcasts that are out there right now. But you're right, the more the merrier, definitely. And we try to support, you know, as much as we can, we try to support good podcasts that are out there. We've got some links on our homepage to the ones that we enjoy. And we'll keep plugging away. If we hear of another good one, I mean, we'll definitely mention it on the show and try to give them a plug, just like I said, to keep the open source movement going. Make sure people are aware of what's going on.
Well, Dan maintains a nice list of all the shows that are out there, and I think it's the most complete list that you have there, Dan. I haven't seen a better list anywhere.
It's tough because I hear about other shows on the periphery, and when I go hunt these shows down, a lot of times, like, maybe they put out one or two episodes, and maybe they have an RSS feed, or maybe it's like some post on a forum somewhere, and it's hard to put it all together. And then, you know, like, you add a show, and then they're gone a couple months later. It's hard to know when they're actually dead or not.
Yeah. This should be like a cutoff. Like, if you can make it, if you're doing a podcast and you make it to 30 episodes, then we'll add you to the list.
30 episodes is a lot. I have no problem adding people. I mean, it's easy to add and easy to switch them, you know, turn them on and off, or put them in a graveyard or whatever, that they're gone. But it's just, you know, after a while, it's like, well, they put out a few episodes last year, and the content is kind of stale, but I'll put them up there still.
Yeah,
there was one that I saw was called, I think, the Hillbilly Linux Podcast, and they only did like two or three episodes. But there's a whole bunch of other ones that are like that too. They only last like two or three or four or five, whatever.
Right. Well, I know that you know for us for a while after our second, I think it was after our second episode, it was like, man, this is a ton of work. Do we really want to continue doing this? You know, and I said yes. I mean, when we first started, we actually had three people working on it, and one of the guys dropped out after the second episode. He said, you know what, I just don't have time to do it. I'm real busy with work and whatever. So I was like, yeah, that's fine, you know. And I can totally understand that. So it's there was a point where we were close to quitting. It's like, no, we're going to keep going. We're going to keep plugging away at it. You know, even if the listenership isn't there. And since that time, we've gotten a lot of listeners. Thanks in no small part to you guys pimping our show for us so often. But you know, we've pulled up a lot of listeners, and we've gotten a lot of interest. Like I said, even from companies now that are kind of wondering if they can help out with resources and even monetarily. So so we're looking into that, and I think that'll go a long way too. If we can get a little bit of support, get a little better equipment going for us, I think we'll be able to do a lot of really cool stuff. So so right now we're gung ho. We're not anywhere near quitting. So hopefully you won't take us off your list there yet, Dan.
Well, I would never do that. Let me return you from the graveyard, though. So what is your opinion on that, though? I mean, with what is your thoughts on sponsorship or support? I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
you know, I know we go back and forth on it. There's a there's one particular company that was interested in sponsoring us, and I think we're pretty close to telling them no, just for that very reason. Kind of we would like to no, definitely not. But you know, we want to be involved with companies that that are doing a lot in the open source space. So it would be hard for us to get involved with a company that was only involved in proprietary software or hardware or what have you. And the other thing is, you know, we will not take money to promote other people's products, you know, when they're bad products or whatever. I mean, we're not going to be taking money from anybody and telling them, oh yeah, we'll always give you good, we'll always say good things about you. I mean, if people make, we want to be able to have the freedom to say whatever we want about whoever we want. You know, so if somebody is sponsoring us and they make a bad call, I mean, we're going to call them out on that. So that's the other thing too, is that whoever sponsors us has to be agreeable to that. They have to say, yeah, we'll give you this more of a kind of an NPR type of a situation where, you know, companies are underwriting your show, but there's nothing, you're not guaranteeing them anything back in return. You know, basically they're doing it out of the good of their heart because they want to have your, you know, they think it's their content is valuable, as opposed to, hey, we want you to pimp our products. I mean, we're not into that.
So you're not looking to do advertising?
No, absolutely not. You know, there's some funny stuff. I think on our last episode we had some funny fake advertisements up there, and that's all well and good. But, you know, at the most, we would probably put up, you know, we may put up, you know, this show is sponsored by whoever, you know, something like that. Something that you might hear on NPR or you might see on PBS, you know, at the beginning of the show where they say, this show is made possible by, you know, and it says whoever. Something like that is fine.
And the number 23.
So what you're saying is like what Pat said a few weeks ago, you just haven't found, someone hasn't approached you with the right price to sell out the source show.
No, I don't think we would sell it out. We wouldn't sell it out. Definitely not. It's more along the lines of, you know, who do we want to be associated with? You know, do we want to associate ourselves with a company that's known for their contributions in open source, or do we want to be associated with a company that's really not doing anything in the open source space and they just want us to mention them on our show? You know, Leo Laporte, I know, I think he's doing some awesome stuff for podcasting and for the tech community in general, but, you know, I don't know, I just don't like the little Dell ad that they've had lately.
You don't like Visa? Come on, man.
Yeah, Visa and Dell. I mean, I understand why he's doing it. I mean, he's trying to make a profit. He's trying to be able to get in the black, right?
He's got like
right?
17 I mean, shows going on right now.
Yeah, and he puts a tremendous amount. I mean, I can't believe the guy hasn't collapsed from a heart attack. I mean, with the amount of work that he's doing.
Give it some time, man.
Absolutely. So, you know, but that's just not what we're looking to do with our show. It's just different. So we'll see what happens.
Those are podcasts you love from people you trust.
That's right.
This week,
I really like a lot of their shows. You know, I already mentioned Floss Weekly. I like to listen to Floss. You know, it was really good to see Chris DeBona up in Columbus. It was really nice of him, I thought, to come out and say hi to us at the get together there. Even though he didn't appreciate some of the comments. you know, but I really like his show. I like This Week in Tech, just as a general kind of news update, because you can't keep track of everything. And for me personally, I really enjoy listening to This Week in Media. I don't know if you guys have listened to that one yet.
I've seen it. I have not attempted it yet. I've tried some of the other ones.
Security Now is good for the weekly Windows Glass. That's what I consider it for.
Yeah, definitely. But This Week in Media is good for anybody that's interested in, and they tend to be pretty Apple heavy, because that's just the background that they come from. so they tend to mention Apple a lot, and what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get in touch with some of them and let them know about some open source things that are going on in the open source community. Because a lot of the projects that they talk about, they're like, oh, you know, this is so great, but, you know, it costs $25,000, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, well, you know, there's this little application called Cinelera where you can do all of that stuff and more for free. So, you know, they don't talk about open source enough on the show, although they have a couple of times they have mentioned some open source projects like Blender. So if you can get past that, they have some really interesting commentary on what's going on with media in general these days, in terms of how things are changing. Things are moving away from the old style broadcast media type of regime into a new internet age where media is distributed over the net. So that's the stuff that I find really interesting. Plus, they kind of geek out every once in a while and start talking about mixers and cameras and things like that, which is all really interesting to me as well. So, I mean, if you're into that sort of stuff, I'd recommend that. And if you can get by all the Apple comments, you know, it's a pretty good show.
I'll have to give it a listen. It can't be any worse than, what is it, the Mac Break? Oh, my God.
Ooh, that's crap.
Yeah.
I tried listening to that at work, and I'm just like, oh, my God, could they get any more up Steve Jobs' butt there? Holy moly.
Yeah, I can't do that one. And they've gotten away from a lot of the Mac stuff, but you know they're really heavy in Final Cut Pro and those kinds of things. And part of the reason I think is because they developed some plugins or something. I think they developed some plugins and they're selling them as you know one of their side jobs. So I mean you know they're going to be stuck with that as, you know, as long as they're doing that. So, but it is a good show, especially in terms of just finding out what's changing. I mean there's some really cool new stuff coming out technologically and on the internet. One of the things they mentioned was Spot Runner. You guys heard of Spot Runner?
No.
So Spot Runner is, if you go to Spot Runner, I think it's spotrunner.com. What they do is they sell advertising time on local cable networks because a lot of times what happens is that cable networks can't fill up all their advertising space, so they end up running ads for like upcoming shows like over and over and over and over again, you know, like, oh, Shark Week, you know, this week on TBS or whatever. So they just run those over and over and over because they haven't sold that little spot, that little sliver of advertising to somebody else. So why not plug their shows? But what Spot Runner does is they go out and they figure out all those time slots that haven't been sold yet, and they allow you to, they have a system for purchasing that airtime. And it's really, really inexpensive to purchase airtime. So if you wanted to run something locally, if you wanted to run an advertisement for your show, for example, I know it's not really the right venue, but let's say your show is just a local show or something, and you wanted to run some cable spots locally, but you didn't know how to do it. Well, you can go out to Spot Runner and purchase a block of time. And I think I did this. I went out and just tried it out to see what would happen. And like for the local Cincinnati area, I was able to purchase 35 30-second spots for about $600. And these were on networks like the Sci-Fi Channel and, pretty big ones. Not like the little ones, but pretty big, well-known channels. For $600, you get 35 spots. I mean, that's a really good deal.
At 3 o'clock in the morning?
No, these were actually spread out. You know, and you can pick that, of course. You can pick, you know, do you want them to run at 3 o'clock or whatever. But these were kind of spread out across the daytime. So daytime, and then some of them were prime time. Not all of them were prime time, but some of them were kind of spread across daytime and prime time.
Was this for the source you did it?
Well, yeah. I just went out to play with it to see how much it would cost and what I could get for my dollar, basically. And it was pretty interesting. Like I can see this working for. You know, if you're a local flower shop or whatever, and you want to get some airtime, you basically got two choices. You can go to the cable network, you can go to the broadcast networks, which is going to be outrageously expensive, or you can use Spot Runner. And by going to Spot Runner, you know, you can save yourself thousands of dollars in advertising. I also thought it would be kind of cool if you wanted to surprise somebody. You know, I don't know how far they would let you go with this if you weren't really selling a product, but I can imagine someone trying to surprise somebody, you know, for their birthday or anniversary or 50-year anniversary or something like that. I mean, you could put together your own ad and throw it up on Spot Runner, and you know, make sure the person's in the room at the time it's supposed to play and stuff. I mean, that would be awesome. So I don't know, just some really cool stuff going on right now, you know, with internet media.
Now, did you actually do this, or did you pursue it, check it out, but not actually get a commercial on?
Yeah, exactly. I you can go through the process to a certain point, and then after that, you know, it's like, okay, check out. So I got all the way up to that point, and then closed the window, basically.
Wow. Because I guess you have to bring your own commercial then, too.
Yeah, they do sell. One of the things they're trying to sell at Spot Runner is they're trying to sell their own media creation, you know, tools and stuff that they have. So they're like, hey, we'll put together the commercial for you. And that can get really pricey. That can get up to, like, you know, in the tens of thousands of dollars for them to create the commercial for you. But you can actually submit your own material and have that be your commercial. And so if you do that, of course, it's just the cost of the advertising slots.
Wow.
A great idea. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember who came up with it. I think it was somebody that's done this before, or similar things. But it's a great idea, because otherwise the cable companies wouldn't be selling those slots. So they might as well sell them to somebody.
Yeah, I'm looking at their site right now, spotrunner.com. It looks pretty interesting.
Yeah.
We should do that for the tech show, Pat.
You want to?
I don't know.
We have to make up an ad for ourselves first.
Right. And even $600 is a lot of money for something like, you know, for us. I mean, there's no way we could afford $600 out of our own pockets to go out and do that. And plus, if you did that, I mean, you know, for podcasts, I mean, you really have a global audience. So where are you going to market that to? You know, what local audiences? Maybe you could run some in New York City or L.A., San Francisco, something like that, where there's a high concentration of tech people, maybe. I don't know.
Nebraska.
There you go.
Or Idaho.
Those are nice.
Nebraska at 3 in the morning.
Nebraska. Corn and open source.
Yeah.
They're nice places.
You know, another thing I wondered, you know, for the lug, since that's kind of local, I wonder how much it costs to advertise in the movie theater. They always have those ads on at the beginning, the little slideshow ads, or some of them are now moving to video.
You got to look at the end. At the end of those ads, they usually say who to contact.
Yeah, but I never looked into actually contacting them to find out pricing.
Sure, it's a theater, so it's probably a lot.
Does anybody go to theaters anymore?
Yeah,
I don't. I've got a kid, so...
Actually, I shouldn't say that. I took my kids last night to, we were supposed to see a preview of Charlotte's Web.
Oh, that looks cool.
Yeah, we got there. We got some free tickets, so we get there, and we got there half an hour early, and there was still a line way at the door. And so what they do, I guess, is they sell twice as many tickets as they have seats to make sure that they fill the theater for those previews. So we got there. There's no way we were getting in, but luckily they said, hey, listen, you know, sorry you didn't get in, but you can see any other show tonight if you want, and we'll also send you some free tickets. So so we saw Happy Feet last night, so it was kind of interesting.
You should have taken them to the Pick of Destiny.
Yeah, well, you know, we balance out.
Yeah, you go to
what the kids wanted and what I want.
What's that, Pat?
What's that?
You go to see those weird art films, don't you?
I've gone to them. I don't know where the weird art theater is around here.
You'll find it eventually.
But Pick of Destiny was pretty good.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like more and more people are staying home. I know we do. We don't, because, you know, we got kids. It's hard to go out, but, you know, with people getting these big screen TVs and with DVDs coming out more and more often, or sooner to the theatrical release, you know, I think people are just saying, I'll just wait for it. Watch it at home. That way I can pause it to go to the bathroom or whatever.
Eventually Hollywood will like, you know, grow a brain and figure out that, you know, they can provide, like, you know, content in real time, you know, so that people don't want to go to the movie theater because it's not that great of an experience, you know? I know Dan's into the whole movie theater thing. I can't stand it personally. You know, I don't want to, you know, walk into a theater and step in a pile of goo, have some 8-year-old kid kick in the seat behind me. I think I'd rather just watch the movie in my own house. So a lot of people do, you know?
Yep. And I think that more and more people the theaters are going to have to, and somebody from, I can't remember which theater, I don't know if it was AMC or one of the theater, the big theater, Lowe's or something, had just recently said that, you know, that they were starting to get concerned because they're paying big bucks for all this first run movies, and, you know, fewer and fewer people are coming to see them. So they were getting pretty concerned about what they were going to do to try to lure people back into the theaters. Anyway.
They just need to make another great comic book movie, and then everybody goes.
Hey,
speaking of comic book movies.
Yeah, speaking of comic book movies, you guys watch Heroes?
Yes.
Yes.
You guys like that? I think it's awesome.
It's great.
It's good.
I mean, it's a little cheesy occasionally, but overall, I think it's a very, very well done show, and it's very entertaining. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, for me, there's a couple shows I watch regularly. One is Lost. The other, of course, is Battlestar Galactica. Can't do without that.
Don't get Pat started.
And then I started watching this one.
What's that?
Pat, you don't like Battlestar, Pat?
Pat loves Battlestar.
I like Battlestar.
Oh, yeah.
He gushes really over Battlestar.
That's a good show, man.
Yeah, Battlestar's a great show. But then this Hero show seems to be really good, too. I mean, I hope they can keep
it
up.
Yeah, I like that, too. And what's good, they were mentioning on the IRC, some new series on the Sci-Fi Channel called The Lost Room. I think that's going to be a regular series, too. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that was a three-night thing, wasn't it? I think the last one's tonight.
Yeah, tonight's the third night. It's been pretty good. It's not bad.
Have to check that out.
See, I don't know how it works.
They've been repeating it.
I don't know how it works with you guys, but I mean, as Pat said, I love to go to the movie theater. I like to watch a movie in a movie theater. I like that experience. But there's a lot of movies that come and go that I'd like to see that I say, I'll wait till they come out on video. And now we have like HBO and all that, and I say, well, we'll just wait till they come out on cable. Then, you know, by the time they get on cable, I forget that I even wanted to watch them. I don't even know they're on there. And I barely watch any TV, and anything I do watch is usually off the TiVo. And then, you know, now you got video game systems, and that either, you know, if I'm not usually watching TV, I'll be playing a video game or something, or on the computer, or reading. It's just my TV watching time is getting less and less every year.
Yeah, I agree. My actual, you know, watching TV when it's on TV, I don't do that all anymore. Everything I watch is either downloaded or TiVo'd. I don't watch anything live anymore at all. I've got a Myth TV box set up, and, you know, the whole house is networked, so the kids know how to use it now, which is great. You know, they know how to get to their shows and what they want to watch. So, yeah, I don't watch anything.
Do you have multiple front ends, Tyler?
I don't have multiple front ends. I don't have a need for that yet. I mean, from other computers in the house, I'm the only one that actually would watch a video from someplace else besides on the TV. So for that, you know, I just fire up M Player. Like I said, everything's networked, so I just fire up M Player and watch whatever I want. So I don't do that, but I've been interested in setting one up just to see how well it works, just because I think it's a great feature.
Yeah, people have these insane setups. If you look at like some of these Myth TV websites, some of these people have these really insane setups where they have like a dedicated back end doing all the recordings with like three or four different, you know, capture cards going, you know, and then they have like a 4 terabyte storage, you know, RAID array storing all their shows, and then it's insane what you can do.
I can't watch enough TV to make that worthwhile.
Yeah.
I mean, I loaded up with like a lot of shit from the Adult Swim, and that's about all I bother to watch.
Robot Chicken?
Robot Chicken, yeah.
Metalpocalypse.
Yeah, I love that one, too. But, you know, that's all I watch on the thing. It loads it up on Sunday nights, usually. It seems when all the good ones come on. And then that's it. That's all I watch.
Yeah, well, I use it a lot for music, too. I mean, I've got the whole thing hooked up to my entertainment system. So, you know, I've got my music library connected to it, so I'll just sit there and pop in the music library, put on the visualizations, and the kids love sitting there watching the visualizations and listening to the music at the same time. So, you know, if I'm doing some housework or whatever, you know, I'll put on the music. I use it a lot for music. You know, just all the features that come with it, not just the TiVo part. You know, being able to watch stuff that I have connected to, like I said, not just live TV, but stuff that I've got in my media library as well, being able to pull that up and watch it whenever I want, is really useful. Because I don't, like I said, I've got 3 or 4 shows that I watch regularly, and that's about it. But, you know, occasionally I've got some stuff, in, like a lot of some of the viral videos out on YouTube or whatever, I'll pull that down and store it in my media library. So I've got that there. So, you know, friends will come over, whatever. I'll be like, hey, did you see that thing on YouTube? They'll be like, no, I missed it. I'll be like, okay, here, look. And I'll fire up, turn on the TV and just browse to it and fire it up. Works great. So I use it for a lot of other things besides just live TV.
Yeah, that's my next project, is to get a Myth TV box going here. And the only problem I see with that is the interaction with the digital cable. Because you get that digital cable set-top box that you have to have an IR extension to change the channels.
Yeah, you need a blaster for a lot of them.
Which is annoying, because then you can only, like, you can't, like, record one channel and watch another. Because there's no way to get, like, another channel on that, because it's already, you need to change it with the IR blaster. Like you could with the older, just regular cable.
Right. Yeah, I've
got is it high definition? A lot of the new high definition cable boxes have FireWire on them. You don't even need to get a capture card. You just get a FireWire card.
Wow, that's nice.
And you control the channels through the FireWire port too.
Oh yeah?
You don't even need an IR blaster. Yeah.
Does that allow you then to just can you like watch one channel and record another?
No, you need multiple tuners for that.
Do you need multiple tuners or in the DVR?
Yeah, multiple boxes.
You need that. Okay, yeah. That's what we'd have to do for that also. If the kids wanted to watch something while we were recording something else, we'd have to get a separate cable box to do that.
Yeah.
I think I'm definitely looking into getting an HD tuner. Right now I've just got the standard definition tuner, but I'm looking to get an HD tuner for that box as well.
Yeah, I'd like to get one of those. I think it's a PC HDTV card. That's
right.
Supposed to just be like a plug-and-play type thing for Myth.
Yeah. Now, the thing I use for my standard definition, my encoder card, isn't actually a card at all. It's an external USB device. I think we talked about this a little bit on the forums, but I've really been happy with it. It's a Hopodge external USB device, and that's the tuner that I use. And what's great about that is I can disconnect it from that box, and when I'm doing some stuff for the show, I actually use that to get a nice clean capture out of my laptop or desktop or whatever. If I'm trying to record some stuff, some screen captures for the show, I actually use that, and that gives me a really nice video feed. And it'll do audio as well. You can do video and audio out of that. So it's a great little device. I mean, that's exactly why I got it, and it works great for what I need to do with it. There's a development. The guy who's doing all the development for that is Mike Isley. And I kind of worked with him, you know, early on when he was taking over the project from somebody else. They had done a little bit of work, but not a whole lot. So I worked with him on testing some stuff, and he's a great guy. He's really responsive. If anybody out there wants to get one of these boxes, there is a driver for it. It is actually in the kernel as of 2.6.18, the necessary drivers to make the device work. So I'd highly recommend it.
Cool.
I think Link popped in, didn't you, Link?
I popped, yes.
How was the concert?
Concert was wonderful.
Was your daughter playing the tuba in that?
Yep, tuba, and she was singing in the choir and the whole nine yards. It was very nice.
Link, we're talking to Aaron Newcomb tonight. Maybe you remember Aaron from the Linux Fest and the Source show.
Oh, you mean that drunk, obnoxious guy we hung out with?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's me.
Of course I do. Yeah, sure. I remember him.
I'm going to go back up to that that Greek restaurant we went to up there in Columbus. That was pretty good.
That was
good. We'll definitely have to mark that down on the calendar for next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good show, man. Definitely on the list of places to go back to.
Yeah, and it's been, you know, like, this is the second year that I've gone, and, you know, it's gotten better every year. I don't know how long you guys stayed at the after party. I had to leave around 11, I think, but, it's amazing. It can get pretty crazy.
We were there, what time did we leave, around midnight or so?
It might have even been a little later than that, but, yeah.
It was weird. There was a lot of people there, and then they all of a sudden just disappeared. And then everybody crammed in this one room that was really hot. And then we left.
You know what I have to say about Ohio Linux Fest? At least it wasn't like some of these conventions where, you know, you show up and, like, you know, everyone's sitting around on a laptop, and they're all instant messaging people sitting, you know, 3 feet across from each other. You didn't see any of that, so.
And there wasn't a massive influx of PowerBooks or Apple Macintoshes. MacBooks.
Thank God. And in fact, the only Macintosh that was there I saw was Dan's.
Now, there were a couple up front at the registration area. There weren't many, though, you know?
No, that's always a good sign.
How about that? It took, like, what, 20 minutes to burn a DVD? Holy moly. That was awful.
At least we had something to burn them, so.
Yeah. Aaron, you had said before about talking about coming on the show, you were going to maybe talk about some issues or some up-and-coming things with Sun, because you work for Sun.
Yeah, if people don't know, I mean, I work for Sun Microsystems. I'm a systems engineer over on the storage side of the house. So large enterprise storage systems, I help customers configure those and work on those for a living. That's what I do in my day job. But obviously, you know, there's been a lot of stuff lately in the news about, especially about Java going open and a lot of really cool things that Sun's doing. So I didn't know if you guys had any questions about that or wanted to talk about that at all.
That's good news, man. I work.
Yeah, it's really good.
And it's definitely a good deal.
Yeah. So I mean, everyone that I've talked to has been both inside of Sun and outside of Sun, of course, has been really, really excited about Java, especially. You know, of course, there's also Open Solaris and some of the other open source projects that are going on right now, as well. You know, NetBeans, if you're a Java developer, it's a pretty good tool. As well as even opening up the hardware platform, opening up the Spark architecture and letting people take a look inside and develop their own chips even, which I think a couple people have done already. So yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff going on right now at Sun in terms of the open source space. It's actually one of the reasons that I went to Sun. I've been working for Sun now since the beginning of April this year. I've been working for Sun, and the whole reason, not the whole reason, but one of the big reasons I joined Sun or considered Sun at all was because of some of the stuff that they had done in the open source space. So
it seems that, like, there's been a real change of culture at Sun the last couple of years, and it almost seems like it was something that had to happen.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, Jonathan Schwartz has been a big part of that since he's taken over. I mean, the whole company really has gone open all of a sudden, and there's good reasons for that. But I don't know if you've checked out Jonathan's blog. or not. But, you know, he's one of the few CEOs that actually has a blog and updates it regularly. And he actually writes it. It's not like he has some lackey off on the side, you know, or secretary or something typing it out for him. I mean, he actually goes on and writes the thing. So so if you haven't checked that out, you should definitely check that out, because he has some really interesting ideas that he's come up with. And he's just been very open in general. I know that he's recorded some talks that he's had with other CEOs, you know, you know, put those out on the website for anybody to watch and see. And it's just a really different culture than it's been in the past. I mean, not so much with Sun, but if you think about some of the other big companies like IBM and HP, and, you know, I think everyone up to this point has been pretty afraid to kind of be out there, you know, to let it all hang out, so to speak. And kind of leaves you vulnerable to a certain extent. But since Jonathan's come on board, and I think even before that with Scott McNeely as well, there was a movement to really open things up and, you know, let everyone take a look inside and say, you know, and comment. I mean, one of the things that we've done recently is, you know, if you go out to our hardware section of our website, you can post reviews of our hardware, whether they're good or bad. Similarly to the way you can do that on like Newegg, if you use Newegg at all, you know, kind of a review section. I'm not sure if they cull that or not to take out the bad reviews. I don't think they do. But one of the things that Sun's done is they've said, "Hey, look, you know, go out and write a review of our product, and we'll put it up there, and we won't censor it. If you have a good review or a bad review, put it out there, let people see. You know, hopefully, let the hardware stand on its own and speak for itself." So a lot of things like that have been going on lately. I think it's a great time, at least for me, to work for Sun. I think it's a wonderful company, and they've been really good for a couple other large companies, Hewlett Packard and Procter & Gamble here in Cincinnati. So I have something to compare it with, and I'm really excited about some of the stuff that's going on at Sun these days.
Yeah, well, you can have Sun Open Audio, Aaron.
Yeah, you know, I've thought about that. I mean, Novell has theirs, right, with TED, so why not? Why not have a Sun Open Audio? They're actually, you know, Sun's pretty big into podcasting. There's several several internal podcasts that are put out on a regular basis, and I think a lot of companies are coming around to the fact that, you know, podcasts are a great way to deliver a message either to internally to employees or externally to customers. You know, it's a great delivery mechanism. It's a lot better than in some respects, because you can target it to people that are interested in a particular area. Like, for example, storage. There's a storage podcast, a Sun Storage podcast. So, you know, you can go out and get the latest on what's going on just with Sun Storage. I think it's a wonderful medium, but I haven't talked to anybody yet about that. But you're right, it's not a bad idea. I mean, if Novell's got one, we should have one, right? And of course, they'll need an experienced podcaster to set that up, that's enthusiastic about open source, so.
And enthusiastic about Sun.
That's right.
Who could that be?
I don't know. No, that's a great idea. Yeah, there's just so much going on right now, you know, from what's going on with Java to Open Solaris. So have any of you guys tried Open Solaris yet?
I have a little bit.
There's a new YCD that's out there. I don't know if it's new, but they just came out with an update called, I don't know if I'm saying it right, but it's like Belinux. Actually developed over in India. And I downloaded that. In fact, I've got the CD sitting right here in front of me. And I want to give that a try, because it'd be a great way to try out Open Solaris. It actually runs KDE, for you KDE fans out there. but it's running on top of Open Solaris. So the great thing about Open Solaris really is, if you compare it to like, this is me personally speaking on all this stuff. Obviously, I'm not an official spokesman for Sun or anything. It's just my opinion. But the great thing I like about it is if you compare it to like Red Hat, what Red Hat's doing with Fedora, and what Novell's doing with OpenSUSE, you know, you're really getting it's really more comparative to like using, you know, AIX or HP. I mean, you're getting an operating system that's been around for years and years and years. You know, one of the main three Unixes, and you're getting that for free with all of the great stuff that's built into it, like, you know, our dtrace that's built into Solaris, or ZFS. You know, we talked about that coming up in one of my episodes, but ZFS is some really cool stuff. if you're into file systems at all. I mean, it can do stuff that really no other file system can do in any one particular package. So, but you get all that for free at OpenSolaris. So, if you haven't tried it, I mean, I'd recommend, you know, firing up that live CD and checking it out, because there's some really, really cool features that you can get for free, which is...
Yeah, back in the day, we used to call Solaris Slowlaris.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely gotten better.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot better, especially with the, you know, the new AMD that we came out with a little over a year ago. That's the other cool thing about that, too, is that they've really opened up... I don't know if you're familiar with Sun's Try and Buy program, and I don't want to make this a huge Sun commercial, but...
We're expecting a check from them.
I mean, if you work in IT industry and you want to take a look at some of these the new products that some has come out with, you can go do a 60-day try and buy, and they'll ship you one at absolutely no charge, and you can load it up and load your applications on it and see how they run, which is what I think it's really all about. I mean, it's really, if you look at what, you know, that try and buy program along with opening up Java and opening up Solaris, I mean, all that stuff is really a marketing tool in the simplest forms, right? I mean, I think what Sun wants to do is get people to try out their stuff and get more market share. So I think that's a big reason why they're doing this, and why they see a big value in openness and open source, is that, you know, one of the things it does for them is it gets people to try their stuff where they might have been hesitant to before. You know, if you can look at the source code and see what's in there, especially for developers, you're more apt to try something out. So,
doesn't Sun officially support Ubuntu on a bunch of their servers now?
Oh yeah, in a big way. I mean, that was kind of surprising for me, but I'm really glad they did it. In fact, if you go out and look, I think it's ubuntu.com/sun. You'll see all the hardware, the Sun hardware specifically, that you can run Ubuntu on. And I know they've been with the Ubuntu development team to make Sun a supported platform for Ubuntu.
Don't you have like a bunch of old Spark machines that you run Linux on?
I used to have a couple of Spark 20s that I ran stuff on. Now I have a couple Ultra 1s and an Ultra 2.
And what do you run on them?
Mostly Debian. The Ultra 2 is slated for an Ubuntu LAMP install, though.
Boy, that really killed the conversation there, Link.
I guess so, yeah.
Oh, I thought Link dropped out.
No, I have this really wicked cold, and I have to take brief pauses to, like, wipe my face off, because I guess all the fluid from my entire body is draining out my nose and has been all day, you know, one of those kind of things.
Oh, man.
It's really horrible. It made for, you know, a rotten concert intermission, too, but... You know what I would like to hear more about? You never hear about from Sun is Star Office. Their continuation with that.
Yeah. I don't know why they don't, maybe they want to let the community take, you know, kind of handle that part of it. But, yeah, they're obviously Sun is since they released the code, they bought Star Office and released it and turned it into Open Office. They're obviously real big in that. But yeah, you're right. They don't market that as heavily. They don't market their involvement in that project as heavily as they could. You know, I think it's probably, at least over the past years, you know, up until Java, up until the open source Java, it's probably one of the key things that they did for the community. Yeah, I mean, I use it, obviously I use it at work, but, you know, I use it on pretty much every machine I run. I mean, it's my default Office suite, and it always works the way I expect it to, and, you know, I can open up, obviously you can open up various formats, including Word, Microsoft Office formats, and, I don't know, it's got some really cool stuff, as far as, you know, even being able to export things to PDFs. I mean, there's an export function, you just click it and export it to PDF. So there's a lot of cool stuff with OpenOffice. You're right. They probably should let people know about that a little more heavily.
I think so.
You gotta take it for what it is, I guess.
Has anybody ever used Star Office? I mean, anymore?
I did.
I tried it out
when it first came out. Yeah, when it first came out, I tried it.
Yeah, I did too, and I back then, this was probably, 3-4 years ago. I didn't care for it that much. But now, it's basically the same as OpenOffice. So if you use OpenOffice, Star Office looks pretty much identical. That's what I use on my work laptop. And I can transfer documents back and forth between Star Office and OpenOffice. I mean, I don't know how much is actually different in the code. I think the main difference is, supportability, because you're paying for, that you're kind of paying for that right. Instead of downloading it free of charge, you're actually putting a little bit of money into it. So you can call up and get support and that kind of thing.
Isn't Star Office supposed to have better document support?
I think that used to be the case. But from what I've seen, and actually using the product, I don't find that to be the case anymore.
When you say document support, do you mean for other formats as opposed to ODF?
Right, for multiple different formats, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that used to be true, but anymore, I think the code has become it kind of merged together the features and everything, so I think that pretty much it's the same in OpenOffice and StarOffice. Again, I'm not a OpenOffice or StarOffice developer, but that's just what I've noticed from using both products.
So, when you're at Sun, obviously I would assume you use a Sun workstation with Solaris on it. Are you using OpenOffice there, or do they use StarOffice?
We use StarOffice internally.
Okay.
I'm actually running, on my work laptop, I actually run Ubuntu.
So I know
a lot of people do run Ubuntu. It's one of the nice things about working for a company like Sun is that since everything is pretty much open, it's pretty easy to integrate. If you're running an open platform like Ubuntu or Red Hat or something like that, you can get to your mail, you can get to your calendar, you can get to all that stuff because it's all pretty much built on open standards. Other companies, like if you're running an Exchange environment, for example, for mail, it's a lot harder to get to and to work with if you're running something that's not Windows.
I feel your pain there because I know that at work I use Thunderbird, and they don't have an Exchange server, but a lot of people use Outlook, and sometimes you get this weird, funky email that comes through and you can't read it all, and then a couple days later they're like, oh, what do you want for the meeting? And I'm like, what meeting? And the meeting that we're having today at 11 o'clock. What do you mean? Oh, we sent an email out. Oh, you mean this thing I couldn't read? Yeah.
Yeah, that was it.
I just trashed it.
Yeah. Now, have you tried running, you said you run your company you work for now runs Exchange?
No, they don't run an Exchange server.
Oh, okay.
That's like the first thing I asked. They were like, pretty much they give you a Windows desktop with basically Zend for PHP development. And I was like, they're like, we don't care what you run. So I'm like, well, I guess I can't run Thunderbird or a different mail client because you guys are running an Exchange server. And they're like, no, we're not running an Exchange server. They were using Outlook. So I'm like, okay, fine. So they don't run an Exchange server, but people use Outlook there because... And I don't know what the hell Outlook is putting out there.
That's a little icon on the desk stand, that's why.
Oh, yeah. So
yeah, that's exactly it, though. I mean, having
that must
standards...
be the right thing to run.
Yeah, having things that are more standards-based, it just helps so much. It just eliminates all that funky stuff that you get when you're running...
I'm surprised they don't make you run Solaris, though, no?
No, they're pretty good about that. Of course, they want people to use it, obviously, because the more you use it, the more you'll get used to it and like it and recommend it to other people. So that's obvious, right? But they don't tie you in like that, which is really nice, because I've worked at my fair share of companies that do tie you in, especially to a Windows environment. And, it's murder for a Linux guy to have to run Windows.
Oh, man, you're telling
me. It's murder for a Windows guy to run Windows.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, but most of the Windows guys don't know that it's murder. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, that it, as far as Sun goes, that's a really super cool position to adopt, because that empowers their employees to be more productive.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wish a lot more companies would be that way, you know?
Right. That's the interesting thing at Sun, is they're coming from the opposite perspective. I mean, most companies start with Windows and then kind of work their way into Linux. And Sun's kind of coming from the other perspective, where they start from Unix and, you know, is working their way into
Windows,
you know, supporting working their way into Windows. I don't think so. I could be wrong about that, but
now, you know what I always find really interesting is if you look across the operating system landscape, and not including like embedded operating systems, because that's a whole different area, but you see a lot of companies are moving towards an open system and supporting and embracing free and open source software. And all but one, and that's like Microsoft, who still remains, you know, that closed entity. Now, even Apple has a lot of, you know, they take advantage of a lot of BSD technology, and they're still a very closed source company, but they have a lot of open source components and compatibility, and, you know, work back and forth. And the only company not doing that seems to be Microsoft.
Yeah. Although I think they would argue with you, right? They would say, "Oh, we're trying. We're writing a plugin for Office, and we signed this deal with Novell."
Well, you know, they're not writing a plugin. They are allowing other people to write plugins to work with their format. It's generous of them.
Very generous.
Yeah.
Well, you know, especially since you know they're going to come out someday and say that they have the patent to the internet or something like that, you know?
Well, SUSE customers don't have to worry about that because they are protected under the covenant.
Right.
So they don't
get that.
They have access to the internet. Internets. Plural.
Internets, yep.
I don't get that, because if Microsoft is offering indemnification for SUSE users, I mean, is it really SUSE or is it NetWare? Because, I mean, most of the stuff that you use in SUSE it's not owned by SUSE. I mean, it's not owned by Novell. So if you offer indemnification for them, wouldn't you be offering it by default? I mean, if you try to argue that fact in court and you say, well, here's a bunch of ones and zeros, and here's another identical bunch of ones and zeros. If you offer identification to one, you have to offer identification to the other, I would think.
Well,
they're
think
offering indemnification to Novell's customers.
So it involves money.
Yes, it does.
You purchase something.
You're buying something from Novell. Now, I don't think they were very specific about what it is that you were supposed to buy from Novell, but they did say Novell's customers.
Right. They can't. I think. Well, they haven't specified exactly what their any like concrete product or software or anything else that they're offering the covenant towards, and I don't think they can, because if they did that, then they'd be in violation of the GPL, or Novell would be, and I don't know. It's just a whole messy situation. I mean, I think. My opinion with Novell, and it kind of, you know, changes a lot there, is that I do believe Novell when they say, you know, they saw a need, they did see their customers were worried about these issues, and they wanted to find a quick fix solution. And I don't necessarily agree with their quick fix solution. I think they just jumped at an opportunity to make you know, one fast nickel instead of two slow dimes, so to speak, in that, now my wife's chiming in there, sorry. Anyway, I think that there is a problem. I mean, the customers have identified that there is a problem. They're scared of possible lawsuits from companies like Microsoft because nobody has ever actually come out and challenged this and won or lost a suit. So, you know, nobody wants to be the first one or the first target. So, therefore, you know, Novell chooses an option that I think is a quick fix but doesn't address the problem at the heart. This whole patent issue and IP issue. It doesn't address the problem. It just band-aids over it and pisses off the community.
Yeah, exactly. I feel bad for some of the folks at Novell, like Ted and some of the other ones. You know, there's a lot of good people there that are working on great projects like Samba and stuff, and I don't know. It's really got to get under their skin, this kind of stuff.
You would think so. However, everybody that I seem to hear from Novell staunchly supports Novell's, you know, decision to do this. And I would really be interested from someone to hear from Novell who doesn't think it's a good idea. You know, I mean, there's a vast number of people who are very outspoken in the open source community who think that the entire deal was, you know, was a real shit thing to do, but so far everybody I've heard from who works for Novell in some capacity or another seems to think it was a wonderful idea, and there's a whole lot of PR going on right now that I see in my RSS feeds every day about, you know, Novell saying, no, it's a wonderful thing, and you guys are just kind of misunderstanding what we're doing. I just don't think so.
I think there are parts of it that are good. Like, you know, I honestly, if Novell and Microsoft entered into an agreement where they would work with each other for better interoperability, and, you know, Microsoft said, well, we're going to, you know, support you, and, you know, when customers are interested in Linux, we're going to send them your way, and we want you to help us out with virtualization, and all the, you know, the stuff that they coordinate on ends up in the open, you know, passed upstream to the open projects, and it's not tainted with any IP or patent issues. I think that's a great idea. I don't think that's a problem. But
so what you're doing there is assuming that in the perfect world where this would work, that Microsoft would be an upstanding and honest company.
I'm saying I don't think that would be a problem, but no, you're right. But on the flip side to that is, you know, you have that whole covenant, which taints, I think, the whole agreement.
Right.
And now you have the whole big, you know, the next thing that blew up was the whole OpenXML versus ODF. And
taint is a good word for it, because you know what a taint is.
Yeah, I know what a taint is.
Taint the front and it taint the back, but it's down there somewhere, you know?
Right, and I mean, what do you guys think of the whole ODF OpenXML debate going on now?
I mean, I'll just say that I might like ODF fine. As long as it's open and it works, I'm not sure I care too much. I mean, I'm just glad that it's open. You know what I mean? I mean, as long as you can see it and change it and you're not locked in to a proprietary format, I'm just happy about that.
I guess what I've been reading that kind of concerns me, and an issue where I would be more on the side of supporting ODF as opposed to OpenXML, but apparently from what some commentary I've been reading is that OpenXML is a Microsoft technology, and while Microsoft does provide capabilities for other applications to write OpenXML, that they have also the ability to, again, taint OpenXML to provide enhanced features or break that compatibility along the way, thus rendering it not so much an open format. And, you know, the question comes up is, one of the compelling arguments I've heard is, it shouldn't be that companies work towards a single vendor's specification to provide compatibility, that they could enhance and extend and embrace where other companies can't or revoke certain rights along the way, whereas everybody should standardize around a neutral format that nobody controls, like ODF. And that way, you know, it's not up to Star Office or Open Office or WordPerfect to be able to be compatible with Microsoft's OpenXML. It's up to every distribution of an Office suite to be compatible with write compatible ODF formats.
But you know what? It really doesn't matter anyway, because Microsoft is going to grab whatever technology it can or whatever open format it can, document format, and twist it. You know, it's going to grab it and work with it for a while, and then it's going to twist it to its own, you know, to suit its own needs and try and take the community along with it. Just like RSS. Perfect example for you.
Right, but you can say, though, that if they take it and you can't write out a document in a ODF format properly, it's not compatible. It's not,
right,
you
but
can't
it
say
matter.
That, but it, well, it,
it
does.
It doesn't matter. Once you got a fistful of the market, it doesn't make any difference. You know, just like all the podcasting stuff with iTunes, how everything is all of a sudden migrating around the formats for, you know, the iTunes podcast and stuff like that. And the same thing with the RSS feed and everything is all of a sudden migrating around, you know, what Microsoft expects the RSS feeds to be.
Well, Apple invented iPod, you know, the whole podcasting thing, right?
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Yeah, but the difference is, though, if you take the standards for RSS and you write a valid RSS feed, it can be read by any RSS. It should be able to be read by any RSS aggregator. If Apple adds and pushes upstream extensions to RSS and they become in the standards, it doesn't break other RSS readers.
Yeah,
well,
but
that's
don't
if you follow
standards.
To a
standard. Yeah,
exactly.
But
they're not following standards, okay?
Right, but they're in the standard. They're in the RSS standard. It's not that where the RSS standard is working to keep up with Apple. Apple publishes or puts those other standards out there. And if you build an RSS reader and it reads to the standards and you write to the standards, it's not that Apple controls it. Now, if you pull it into iTunes and iTunes says they read the standard RSS feed and it doesn't read yours and yours complies to the standards, then it's iTunes that's broken, not the RSS standard.
That's absolutely correct. However, what you're trying to insinuate is that anybody gives a shit. And nobody does. Once they get in and they start using their iTunes stuff to read all their RSS feeds or their enclosures or whatever, and Apple, you know, starts adding things to trick that out, and they're still reading it under iTunes, they don't give a shit about the standard anymore. You know what I mean? That large group of people don't care. And as other people migrate their feeds to accommodate what iTunes is now looking for, they don't care about the standard either. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, basically
so
they have
a
choice.
It's a hijacking. You know,
right,
it's
exactly.
A hijacking.
No.
Well, but they have a choice, right? I mean, they can write an extension for RSS and try to have that and submit that. Or they can just say, you know, screw it. We're going to do our own thing because we've got people locked in. We'll just do what we want.
Right. Right.
What I see all the time is the
screw it scenario, you know?
Right, like Internet
Isn't
Explorer.
That what Microsoft did with Java?
Exactly.
You know? They took their version of Java and they changed it enough so that it would break, you know, regular standard Java programs.
Mm-hmm.
And they got sued over it.
Yep.
Well, you know, you say that nobody cares, but I don't think that's the case, because if nobody really did care, there wouldn't be this big brouhaha going on about the ODF and OpenXML, and there wouldn't be a lot of legal issues floating around and people trying to fight in court and lobbyists to oppose the adoption of ODF, because I think a lot of governments are really concerned.
Well, certainly, but, you know, that's the informed person. That's the you and me and the listener of our show and the people who watch Aaron's show and things like that. That's the, you know, the informed netizen. Okay, but most people, you know, the face facts, most people are just sheeple, you know?
Well, you're
and they're
right.
going to do whatever comes pre-installed on their computer. And we all know that what comes pre-installed on their computer is, you
Windows.
Know, iTunes under Mac OS X or Windows. So, you know, and they're going to blindly go with whatever it is on there, and they don't know any better, you know what I mean? And I don't think that the informed minority that we are has enough, you know, as a minority, we have enough pull to make people, you know, look at the standards anymore. You know, I'm not sure that we do without having people actually, like, copyright the standards and then sue people when they deviate from it or something like that.
Well, I think in certain areas, and I still think ODF OpenXML is one of them, that it's a really important issue and things are moving and there's potential for a lot of change there. But, on the other areas like, multimedia codecs and stuff like that, you know, I agree with you. Most people just blindly take what's in front of them and, you know, they don't give a
right.
damn. Which is, I'm not sure which podcast had brought this up, but they were talking about, you know, and it was a blog posting somewhere, too, about multimedia support on Linux, and why is it that when people come to Linux, they expect to be able to use those same closed formats on Linux and throw up their arms and say, well, this is a Linux problem. I'm not going to switch to Linux if I can't play MP3 or QuickTime or any other format that's closed, when they don't approach any other operating system like Windows or Apple with those same issues. Now, albeit there is
sure.
more support on those platforms for certain media types, but if you're an OS X user, getting Windows Media Player isn't necessarily an easy thing, and it doesn't work that well. Same thing with if you're a Windows user and want QuickTime, that is the most god-awful application on Windows that you could possibly run. It's always breaking stuff. It's always causing issues with Windows, and sometimes the installer hoses your system.
Right.
But hey.
But wouldn't it be great if Linux was the operating system that lets you run all that stuff flawlessly without having to mess with it? I mean, I understand your point, and kind of
rule them all.
Yeah. I mean, my counterpoint is, hey, how are we going to get people to switch to Linux? I mean, if that's the goal, wouldn't it be great if you could just say, you know what, pop the CD in your drive. Now try to open that file again. Watch what happens. And it just runs. I mean, we still got a long way to go before we get there. And having to deal with this whole mess of proprietary codecs is not an easy question to solve. But
sure.
when I look at a question like that, I say, you know what? I understand that people are going to want to remain pure and not run proprietary stuff on their operating system. But I think for the general masses, you know, that would be a huge draw. If you could just say, look, pop the CD in, start it up, it runs, it plays whatever you want, and it just works. So that's you know, when it comes down to it, I mean, a lot of people, that's really what they're looking for. They're not, you know, they're not into the free software movement. You know, we are, but a lot of people are just, they just want to play their stuff. They just want it to work and not crash all the time. I think we've got the not crashing part pretty well nailed for the most part, but you know, getting stuff to work, I mean, if we could get there, I mean, that would be a huge swing, I think, in getting Linux on people's desktops.
What do you mean by getting
yeah,
stuff
but then
to
is
work?
Is it really Linux anymore then? Because aren't you suggesting that what we're looking toward is making Linux a better Windows than Windows is?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think it's kind of a bridge to get where we want to go. I know people disagree with that, but I think that having proprietary codecs available, at least giving people the option of having them available, and to some extent that's there today, right, with the alternative repositories that people can use to get support for things like MP3 and that kind of stuff. But I think doing what Fedora did, for example, with their installer, where they give you the option to link to other repositories on install so that you can install some of that stuff right there, I mean, I think that's kind of taking a step in the right direction to say, you know what, we understand that not everybody is interested in running proprietary stuff in this way, but at least we'll give you the option to do it, especially for people that aren't going to have the wherewithal to figure out how to do that stuff on their own. And I don't know if it is necessarily if it takes, you know, if it takes the openness out of it entirely or not. I don't think it does. I mean, there's certainly a lot of commercial applications that you can buy to run on a Linux OS, but it doesn't necessarily diminish the fact that you're still running on an open platform.
Oh, I see what you're saying, and you know, I do agree with you on a lot of that. I think it is up to the individual user then, a choice. But on the flip side of that, it's really not a legitimate choice because it's not a legal choice right now. There are still legal issues surrounding the capability of running that multimedia codec, which is something that we're going to have to eventually come to terms with and solve.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that goes beyond the technical aspect of it. Because, you know, you talk about one system to rule them all with media codecs. You know, pretty much anything I throw at my systems, I can run.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's not like that on other operating systems. I know that. Not as easy.
Yeah. And I have a horrible time in Windows trying to get stuff to run, and that's the platform that's supposed to run everything. And I have a horrible time trying to get some formats to run in Windows.
If you know someone who runs Windows, tell them to use VLC. That thing can handle pretty much anything.
Yeah, VLC does a great job.
And the new version just came out, too.
Yeah, something like 8.6, I think it is.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, Aaron? Before we get too far off on other things, I want to cut back to Cinelera for a second. What version of Cinelera are you running? Are you on the 2.x branch now?
Yeah, I'm up at the 2.1 release version, which is really cool because it includes some OpenGL support. So if you're running some of the NVIDIA or ATI cards, mostly the NVIDIA though, they have really good support for OpenGL. So if you're running those, then a lot of the effects and the compositing window and stuff can all be rendered with OpenGL, which makes it a lot better, a lot faster.
That's good.
Yeah, it's really cool. It was kind of a pain at first to get installed because you had to have certain libraries loaded before you could get the OpenGL stuff, before you could get Cinelera to compile with OpenGL. But now there's packages. I believe there's some packages out there that actually have the OpenGL. You know, they're built with the OpenGL support, so they should run as long as you have the correct libraries for your video card installed. But it's coming along really nicely. I know that they're always looking for help with Cinelera, even to the point now. I just saw a post yesterday and today where they're looking for people that are native English speakers to proofread new versions of the manual, because the guy that's doing the manual right now is not a native English speaker. So, you know, there's some little quirks in there that you would expect from somebody that doesn't speak English natively. So, you know, they're even looking for help, just something as simple as that, somebody to read through a document and correct, you know, grammatical errors. So if anybody out there is looking to work on a really cool project, I know they could always use help. But first you should consider helping us out at the source.
There you go. Always with your hand out.
That's right. That's what you got to do, though. This is a community effort, and it's something that, you know, we're an open source podcast, or we do the show is produced entirely with open source software. We don't use any proprietary software to produce the show. We figure that's important if you're doing an open source podcast to be able to produce the show with open source software. So everything that we use is open source, and we're really into the community aspect of it. We'd like to get a community developed around the show to support the show. We think that's important. We think it can be done, but we definitely need to get some people plugged in and involved. So anybody that's interested, again, send us an email, thesourcefans@gmail.com.
What you need to do is you need to then take all those emails and then head out to all sorts of forums and demand that people pay you money for your show, for downloading your show.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
And then throw a hissy fit and burn out and just leave the community and go to Apple or something.
Yeah.
Speaking of Apple, we run our show completely on Apple hardware and software.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we got the GarageBand here. And we're streaming to QuickTime servers. And I don't know. I don't even know the product. Yeah, I don't know the product line.
Dan's got to ruin the whole thing by getting a System 76 machine in there.
That's it. I should have.
Well, no, that's all right, because just like me, he runs a window manager that has multiple virtual desktops on it, which of course we all know was recently invented by Apple.
Yeah.
So we're still using their ideas and their technology.
It's
the
odd.
Virtual desktops that's an Apple thing.
I get worried about using it because Spaces hasn't been released yet, so running virtual desktops technically is still an alpha, maybe beta right now, and I will feel a lot more comfortable running my virtual desktops when Leopard comes out and Spaces is readily available, knowing that now I'm going to be running a solid, stable application. That
right,
I feel so bad because
right
I'm
now,
recording
the
show on
a
Mac.
Yeah, you go, Alan.
Hey, it works. I ain't worried about it.
And speaking of systems, let me just bring up this System 76 laptop here that I got a few days ago, because I know Pat's really excited for me to review this thing quickly. And,
we've been talking about it for so long.
Yeah, I know. It I ordered a Serval Performance. It's a beefy system. It is a Core 2 Duo. I think 1.8 gigahertz, has a gig of RAM in it, the NVIDIA 256 megabytes video memory on it. Beautiful. I guess it's I think it's 15-inch screen. And I ordered it last week. I think it was Wednesday is when I actually ordered it. Maybe Thursday. Wednesday, I don't know. I forget which day it was that I ordered it. And it arrived on Monday, which was surprising. I can't believe how fast they actually got this thing to me. The only hiccup in the whole process, which isn't really their fault, but since I expected it was going to arrive when I was at work, we wanted it sent to my wife's job. And because my wife's job is not the primary address on our card that I ordered it with, they needed to get the bank or the credit card company to verify that that was a legitimate address, because they were different addresses. They had issues with fraud. And to make a long story short, I called the credit card company, who said I had to call the credit union that I got it from. When I called the credit union, and they said, well, we can put that address on the card, but we can't verify to anybody else other than you over the phone that it's a legitimate address. So they couldn't ship it to my wife's work, which was a pain in the butt. Anyway, it arrived here on Monday. I pulled the thing apart. It's a beefy system. I mean, it's pretty big. Link, you know your Dell?
Yeah.
It's bigger than that.
The old one?
Yeah.
Really?
Size-wise, it's bigger. It's not really thicker than it, but it's like size-wise, it's bigger. It's really light. I think it weighs, I don't know, but it's really light. It's not like heavy. It's not like a brick, but it's just
a dull brick.
Yeah, it's size-wise, it's really nice. It's very comfortable.
What size screen does it have, you said?
I believe it's a 15-inch. I'm not sure. I'd have to double-check on their site. I didn't remember.
Widescreen?
Yeah. The screen looks very much like a MacBook screen. It is a 15.4-inch display is what it is. It does, I believe I have it at 1200 by, I don't know what the display is. Anyway, I got this thing out. I fired it up. It came up. The screen was looking beautiful. I had been tempted to use the automatics script to pull down some of the other extra software I wanted, but I didn't really need to do that because they already had it set up with just about all the repositories that you would want for Ubuntu. The only repository in there that I wanted to get was the barrel stuff that I had to actually manually add, but that was pretty simple. So I pulled it out of the box, I had it up and running, and I pulled down some video codecs and everything, and you know, in a few minutes, and was good to go. It had some issues at first connecting with my wireless access point, and I think it was because I was this access point might be getting a little kludgy. I was too far away around the corner and anything. So the first time, the network application manager was giving me issues, but I was able to connect manually. But since then, I have not had a problem connecting to my access point. When I pull up the network manager, I see about five other access points on a regular basis that I can connect to. That must be my neighbors. So that's pretty neat. It's running Ubuntu Edgy. The system itself is really responsive. I can't believe how fast it is. It's really sweet. All the hardware pretty much works except for the video, the webcam, built-in webcam in there. And apparently there's a flash card reader in here that they don't have the specs for that they can write a driver. The company's being really not forthcoming with the what they need to do to get the driver working. But that's okay because I already have a multi-card reader, so I'm not too interested in it. I slapped Barrel on here and had full 3D desktop extravaganza going on. That worked pretty well. It's hard to use Barrel when you're using a trackpad.
Dan, have you had someone come up to you and ask if that's a Mac?
No, I haven't taken it out of my house yet.
No, okay.
I find
he's afraid to.
Yeah, I find it hard to use, you know, to actually use Barrel and be able to move the desktop cube around with a trackpad. The trackpad itself is, you know, works just like any other trackpad. I notice that I have a problem using trackpads occasionally, where if I hold them at a certain angle, like the laptop at a certain angle, sometimes the trackpad acts a little funky. Did you guys ever experience that?
No.
Where you'd be all of a sudden...
I try very hard to stay away from them. I like the keyboard clip much better.
Yeah, this doesn't have that. The system itself, phenomenal. I would highly recommend it. I'm trying to get my wife to get a System 76 Pangolin series, which would suit her better than the one she has here. The old gateway that she's running, that's been Frankenstein so many times already. But she's really looking into that. It's a sweet system. The only complaints I have with this aren't with the hardware or the system itself. It's more with GNOME. I was speaking to Aaron about this before the show. I like to have my desktop set up a certain way. And like I told you this last night, I like to, you know, my background, I like to have like a rotating set of desktop images. I like to set my own key, hotkeys and everything. And I can do that in XFCE. I can do that in Fluxbox. I can even do it in KDE. I can't do that with the same ease under GNOME. Now, I found a script that some guy hobbled together in Python that allows you to change the, you know, set a cron job to change the desktop background. The way that you have to do it is you have to actually edit some XML file for in the GNOME configuration to actually change your background on a regular basis. It's kind of funky. And the same, I guess, holds true for adding your own customized hotkey. While GNOME lets you define keys that they've already specified to do different things, I can't say, well, I want to be able to press Alt and the space bar and bring up a run application dialog. So that kind of frosted me. I'm still trying to use, you know, get accustomed to using GNOME. It's not that bad. It's just not something I'm as comfortable with as using, you know, say, XFCE, which I've been using on a regular basis, or some of the other window managers. I do not like Totem. And GNOME and Ubuntu seem to absolutely espouse Totem. Video codecs have not been a problem. I pull up a video in a browser in Firefox, and it wants to run the Totem version of the Mozilla plugin. And that, in my opinion, sucks. Totem just plain sucks. I hate Totem. I put in a DVD. Yeah. I tried to play the DVD through Totem. It sucks. I play it through Zine. Not a problem. MPlayer, not a problem. So today I went through and I ripped out the links for the plugin for the Totem Player and just used MPlayer plugin, which works beautifully. Why mess with a good thing, right? Why? Why try and stuff this kludge in there that doesn't work when a MPlayer works perfectly fine? I don't like
But everybody tells me about the fact that I'm still using XMMS to listen to all my music.
That works perfectly fine, that program, though.
What, XMMS?
Plus it's on, like, every distro has it.
Everything, right.
I prefer Beat Media Player, which is essentially, you know, what XMMS has modified into for the GTK2, if I'm not mistaken. But I like Beat Media Player. I like XMMS. I like Amarok. I don't like Totem. I hate Totem. I hate the Totem plugin. I tried to remove the Totem plugin with Aptitude, and it told me if I remove the Totem plugin, it's going to remove the Ubuntu desktop package too. So I just moved the symlinks out of that Mozilla plugin and Mozilla Firefox plugin directory, and, you know, said to hell with it. If I ever need to do anything or modify anything, because I know what's going to end up happening is sometime later on down the line it's going to want to update something, and it's going to go into a tizzy because it can't find those symlinks. They aren't there anymore, and it's going to bitch about that and say, oh my god, files are missing, we can't update this package. But
you gotta love those dependencies, man. You try to remove one little thing, and you know, and the whole desktop gets removed.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's another thing. That's one of the things if I had to complain about Arch, I see that all the time, is for some reason, like, I like Zine for DVDs, but I like MPlayer for about everything else. And somehow, for some reason, every time I get an update to Zine, it drops that GZine player in my plugins directory. And so instead of using the Mozilla plugin like I like, it uses the Mozilla GZine plugin. And that's another one I hate. I love Zine, but I hate the GZine plugin. Because it never works right. It never brings up the video or whatever you're using inside the browser. It opens up some kludgy window outside the browser to do it. But I'd rather run that than a Totem player. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it sounds like you need to be running Vista.
Yeah, I should be running Vista or Arch. But you know what? Those little issues aside, I mean, it's just great. I love the System 76. They did a great job. It didn't seem to come with a manual or anything. I think all that's on the discs that came with it. I never looked at it. They didn't come with a restore disc either. But
so, Dan, what are the odds that you're going to change the distribution within 30 days?
I don't know. I mean, I don't mind Ubuntu. And so far, everything on here, you know, it's pretty much the same as my desktop, my workstation that I use. I think I'm going to try and live with it. My only concern about switching to another distribution is System 76 has this wonderful driver package that they provide, and they've got it all tweaked out and all the repositories and everything set up so that if they make a change to their driver, it automatically comes down onto your system, and it's easy to keep up to date with that. And I haven't looked at what I need to do to go out and get those drivers and scripts and everything to run on a different distribution. Which, if I'm not mistaken, the gentleman we spoke with said that that's all available. You just have to do it yourself.
Right.
I mean, this isn't like, you know, a system that came with Windows installed on it where you had to slap a different distribution on yourself. And, you know, I've never had a problem running different, you know, distributions under laptops, but we've been able to get around some of the quirks or whatever. So I don't think it would be difficult to install a different distribution. I just don't see a need to do it right now. Now, maybe if it came with SUSE, that would be a different story.
Exactly, man. You got the machine. It's preloaded with Linux. Life is good.
It's got a nice little Ubuntu sticker on the inside. It's got a System 76 logo on the outside. And there's no product licensing key on the bottom.
Nice. Very nice. And you have no EULA agreement that you have to click on when you turn it on the first time.
Nope. Probably the only other thing I might want to get this, is another battery. The battery life is about 2.5 to 3 hours. And if you start using it pretty heavily, videos and doing other things, I suspect the battery's going to get eaten faster. The first night we had it, I went and I pulled down the Legend of Zelda retrospective. Did you guys see that yet? It's a 6-part series out there on, I think it's from IGN. which details the entire Zelda series from its start on the Nintendo all the way up through the version on the Wii that just came out. And it's a fantastic series. We sat here in the living room, pulled that sucker up full screen on this, and the family sat and watched it. We had a great time. System 76 brought our family together. It saved my marriage.
No, no, you have to write back and say that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to send Carl Rochelle a Christmas card saying that. Thank yeah. you.
You brought our family together.
That'd be awesome if they put that on their website.
Yeah. System 76 saves family, although we weren't in any jeopardy, but it sounds...
They don't have to know that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they did a great job, I think. You know, the turnaround on getting this laptop was I was surprised how fast it came. Because they were talking, you know, once they approve the order, it gets sent to manufacturing. It's up to 10 days, and they had that to me in less than a week. Two thumbs up.
That's great. I've been looking at System 76 because eventually I'm going to need a... I'd like to have a laptop where I can do some editing. I mean, I can do some editing, actually. I've got a Dell D610, and it does okay, but I'd like to have a laptop that has a nice video card like that and everything to do some video editing with, so I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, give them a look. I mean, I'm not disappointed at all. I mean, it's really good. And the price-wise, it's not, you know... It's not an outrageous price. It's not like, you know, the ThinkPad that you want to get Linux installed is $3,000. It's not an outrageous price. You're not paying an MS tax. That's the way it goes. There's another company out there that just recently popped up. Pat, did you see who that was?
Which one, R-Cube?
Not R-Cube. There was one that I just heard about in the past day or two. Seemed to be selling like what looks to be similar to System 76 systems. I'm not sure if they were selling they're coming pre-installed with Ubuntu or OpenSUSE. I'm not.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember. I forget the name of it.
Yeah.
Well, you can always go to the Elixir website. They have a database of vendors that sell Linux pre-installed systems and also machines with no OS on them. So, by all means, check that out if you're looking for a new system.
Yeah, definitely check it out. Well, we're getting close to the closing time here, gentlemen. And Link.
Yeah, I think play it out.
Aaron, I want to thank you for coming on tonight, and we actually have a show with you that's not going to explode.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully. You know what, guys? After last time, I've got Audacity running, and so I'm capturing everything on this side. If you need it, I can ship it over to you.
There you go. The double ender.
All right. No, that was great, though. I appreciate you guys having me on, and hopefully we can drum up some more support for the show. We're gonna keep it going. I've got, like I said, we've got an episode that's going to come out in about a week or so, and hopefully we've got actually all of the... everything recorded for the next episode after that already. So hopefully we can get that out fairly soon. And we've got a bunch of great ideas going on. There'll be some additional stuff going on the website. In fact, we've got a review of a Sun X4100 that should be coming up. We probably won't do a segment on that on the show, but we're going to put that up on the website. So some pretty cool technology reviews coming up as well. So cool stuff coming up. We just hope that we have enough energy to get it all out there.
Awesome. So you think you'll have your next episode out before the holidays, or are you going to be doing that during the holidays?
No, I think we'll definitely have the next episode out before the holidays, and then the one after that will probably be out sometime, I would say, right after the holidays, early January.
And your website was dignation.com.
No. Although we like Dignation, it's a good show. But no, our website is www.thesourceshow.org.
Yes, thesourceshow.org.
Definitely go check it out.
You won't be disappointed.
And any suggestions that people have, you know, shoot them our way. We're happy to you know, talk to people through email or through the comments on the site or through the forums. And if people have suggestions, hey, I'd like to see this, you know, let us know. We'd be glad to look into anything that anybody suggests. And vote for the poll. I'm going to take the poll off in a couple of days. If you haven't seen the poll out there, definitely go vote on the poll. If you go out and look, it's basically what would you like to see more of coming from the source. And if you haven't seen it, it's you should definitely go vote. I think the options are something like demos and reviews, more news, interviews, and then of course the last option is crotch shots. So only because we had some comments from somebody on the Lug Radio forums that you know were basically saying, you know, I could do without that. So we threw that in there just for a little fun, a little humor.
Definitely, yeah.
Actually, you know what's really scary is actually some people have voted for that. So that's a little nerve wracking.
Aaron, what's wrong with your website?
Is it not up?
No, I thought it was just because I couldn't get to it with all the stuff going on. But there's apparently some people on the IRC that are not able to get to the sourceshow.org either.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I'm pinging that right now, and it's not up. So when we get down here, I'll run down to the basement and see what's going on.
Don't you hate that?
It's a bad, yep. Bad marketing item right there, I'll tell you.
No, but hopefully by the time the show, the recorded part gets out, that'll be up and working. Shouldn't be any problem. You never know. Yeah, I got kids. There was a bunch of second grade boys down there playing in the basement today. I wouldn't put it past them that
what's
one of them went and hit the button. Exactly.
What happens if we pull this cord out?
Yep.
Hey, it's a power strip, just like mine at home. My daddy always says, turn it off.
Hey,
it happens.
Speaking of Lug Radio, Pat, what's going on over there at Lug Radio forums?
Again, spam, man.
Spam again.
Our spam situation's been pretty damn good, I have to say.
We haven't had a spam
situation.
Now
you've just jinxed it.
Not in months.
No, and I hats off to you and, crap, who else? Who else is the administrator over there?
Snark Out.
You guys doing a fantastic job. For those people who have written to us and said, what the hell happened to my account? We apologize. We've just been pretty anal about spam. And again, if you're going to sign up on our forums, please identify in some way under hobbies or interests or whatever that you are a legitimate user who likes Linux and why you're coming to the forum, so we don't look at you and say, well, here's a guy, he doesn't have anything, or, you know, buzzwords to stay away from, pharmaceuticals, stock,
Dallas.
Finance, yeah.
Levitra.
Yeah. Big boobs.
Penis patches.
Yeah. Stay away from those kind of hobbies and interests, and you'll definitely have no problem getting on. And if we deleted your account let us know.
Tell them they need to drop the secret words of the hoagie guy.
Hey, there you go.
They'll know for sure that you belong in the forums.
There you go.
The doggy dugout.
Yep, anybody knows about the doggy dugout or the hoagie guy.
Do you get a lot of spam over there at the Source show?
Tons of it. I'm glad to hear I'm not the only one. We eventually had to put the spam filter. We use Drupal for our for our site, and they've got a really good spam module that you can load. And for a while, we were doing fine without it. You know, I'd go in and delete, you know, maybe 25 spams a week or something like that. It wasn't preferred, but it was manageable. But then lately, like for some reason, all of a sudden, spam's been going out of control. You know, unfortunately, probably half the traffic that we get is spammers trying to get in there and put ads for Viagra and stuff in the comment sections of the website. So yeah, but the new Drupal module works. Like I said, it works pretty good. It cuts out about 95% of the spam, and then you can go in and customize it, you know, to get that even lower. So yeah, we definitely have a problem, but we try to manage it as best we can.
Yeah, it sucks, you know, and it sucks when something like that happens to anybody. You know, Lug Radio over there having that problem. That's just uncool.
Even personal spam. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but like over the past month or so, my spam in my email inbox has gone through the roof.
Yeah.
I used to run about I use Gmail for my email, for pretty much all of my email at this point. And I used to run about 5,000 spam messages a month. And I just looked at it today, and I'm over 10,000 spam messages now this month. It's crazy.
It is. And, you know, I notice it comes in waves, though. I mean, you'll get, like, that steady pounding, and then, like, sometimes, like, one or two days a month, it, like, goes hog wild. And it just gets crazy. And it's the same damn ones, too.
So what happens when Dan gets hold of your email address?
Yeah. Funny. Funny.
All right, Dan, play us out.
Pat, do we have any Frapper Map shout-outs or anything?
Yeah, we actually do. I'm just going to go through whatever last bunches. I'm Rob Mitchell, Memphis, Tennessee. We got Phil in Curley, Alabama. Jay Holler in Washington, New Jersey. Mike Hebble from McHenry, Illinois. Thomas Yap from Perth, Australia. Rory from Qualicum Beach, British Columbia. David Jordan from Friendswood, Texas. Justin Dunning. Daniel from Townsend, Massachusetts, and Fatso Bob from Westminster, Colorado.
Awesome. How many does that make us?
We got a,
there you have it.
We're like at 866, I think.
Still 134 to go.
Yeah, well, we got some music to play out then, right?
Yes, we do. You want to introduce this music
up?
Since it's already ready to go?
Yeah, the artist's name is John Sid. John Sid is from Staten Island. I know him from my band days. He's one of the few people from that scene back then who are still out there playing. He's got the John Sid Band, and he plays in the New York City area. He's quite a good singer. He sounds, a lot of people say he sounds like Chris Cornell from Soundgarden. Also, what's the other band he's in? Whatever. But it's metal. You know, it's good stuff, man. You know. And, John's still out there doing his thing, so props to John Sid.
Awesome. And thank you, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks again, guys. You know, it's funny, the saddest part about being on your show is I won't be able to listen to it tomorrow because I already know what I said.
There you go.
You know what? I find it's always an adventure to listen to the show anyhow.
I do it every week.
Yep.
All right.
So, yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a happy holiday. And
you too.
I'll call you guys out of here.
Yeah. So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
Damn it, wrong.
Wrong one. good night, everybody.
Good night, Alan.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Link.
We'll be right back.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. Over.
That's it. Thank
We're
you.
Still here.
Oh, you're still there. That was a good song.
You like that?
Yeah.
I'm still here.
Does he have a website or something?
Yeah, he's got a MySpace site. He's got a new band. I know John from freaking years ago, man. He was in this one band that I was in at different times, and then his drummer in his band was a drummer in my band. So there was a whole bunch of times that I used to like fill in for like their bass player and stuff. And he's pretty good. He's still out there. He still jams.
This is like 170, right?
171.
171?
Okay. Yeah, last week was 170.
The abortion episode was 170.
Hey, okay. Any luck on getting those two guests that we were supposed to have last week back on again?
I sent him emails. He didn't respond.
Who's he?
Miguel.
Oh. Maybe we could try again for next week. I don't know.
We can try.
We can always get Bruce on.
Yeah, we can always talk to him.
I never have a problem talking to him.
Yeah. The phone call would be better, hopefully, than last time we talked to him.
Yep. Actually hear him.
Yeah.
That was funny. It was an episode. He was talking a lot about accessibility and being able to, you know, for technology for people, particularly blind and deaf people. And you couldn't hear him because the crowd was too loud.
It's very noisy. Yeah. Very noisy.